The UN Human Rights Office expresses grave concerns over the excessive use of force by the Israeli military against Palestinians. Final duel is on for French presidency. Who will be the next tenant of the Élysée Palace? Voters will choose between incumbent Macron and his rival Le Pen. And fighting rages on in the east of Ukraine as Russia's military offensive enters its third month. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Badr Zarjafeh. Good to have you with us. Now, top story this hour, the United Nations demanding impartial and independent investigations into escalating violence in occupied Palestine. The spokeswoman for the UN Human Rights Office is gravely concerned about the growing atrocities and the excessive use of force by the Israeli military. Ravina Shamdasani says that numerous videos have raised serious concerns about the conduct of the Israelis that's widespread, unnecessary, and indiscriminate. According to the official, many Palestinians have been beaten, shot with a sponge tip bullets, and sustained serious injuries. Over the past month, Israeli forces have killed or wounded a score of Palestinians and arrested hundreds in the occupied territories, including at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound.
Israeli military forces have raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds as worshippers gathered for dawn prayers, with medics reporting that more than 40 Palestinians were injured as a result of the raid. Local sources said some worshippers were trapped inside the mosque amid clouds of tear gas, with the regime troops throwing stun grenades at them. According to the Palestinian media, at least 43 Palestinians were injured in the raid. The development comes a day after as many as 30 Palestinians were wounded after Israeli forces continued their violent attacks against worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Al-Quds. The troops used rubber bullets, tear gas canisters, stun grenades, and pepper spray against the worshippers, who have been braving increasing aggression ordered by the Israeli regime since the beginning of the holy fasting month of Ramadan.
Right now, of course, the site of the mosque is sacred to three major religions, but the Israelis have no consideration for anyone but themselves and their own wants and desires. So right now, when they are entering the mosque, the sacred mosque, attacking people while they're praying, worshippers are there for dawn prayers, and the IDF soldiers and the settlers are simply invading the mosque, firing tear gas, rubber bullets, and live rounds of ammunition sometimes, all to terrorize and drive them away because they want the site completely for themselves.
The series of raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, one of the holiest sites in Islam, began last Saturday when the Israeli troops injured more than 150 Palestinians there.
The Hamas has warned that continued violations at Al-Aqsa could set off another military confrontation with Tel Aviv. There is a movement that's called for mass Palestinian mobilization in defense of Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds City. Meantime, Iran has condemned the desecration of Al-Aqsa by the Tel Aviv regime, saying that it's witnessing Zionist crimes on a daily basis.
Israel's new campaign against the Palestinians doesn't stop at the occupied West Bank. On Thursday, the Israeli army carried out airstrikes across the Gaza Strip, targeting positions belonging to the resistance groups. Similar developments last year led to an 11-day war between Israel and Gaza-based resistance groups. The conflict killed over 260 Palestinians, including scores of women and children. The Arab League broke its silence on the Israeli raids on Al-Aqsa, calling on the regime to prevent Israelis from entering the compound. In an emergency meeting in the Jordanian capital, Amman, The organization warned that Israel's actions threaten to ignite a cycle of violence, and the attacks and violations represent a blatant provocation to the feelings of Muslims. But how will such declarations help defuse the situation when, ironically, countries that have recently normalized their ties with Israel, including the United Arab Emirates and Morocco, were in attendance at the meeting? People took to the streets of the Jordanian capital Amman in solidarity with the Palestinians on Friday, calling on the government to expel the Israeli ambassador and scrap a peace treaty signed with the regime. Such protests have been held in several different countries, but without a unified international response to Israel, the protests are unlikely to be enough to put an end to such violations.
The international community, as you mentioned, is not doing anything about this. It's so hypocritical to see the international community condemn the things that the Russians are doing to the Ukrainians when the Israelis are doing the exact same things to the Palestinians, and that and their crimes are supported by the United States and other nations.
In the absence of any practical measure taken against the regime, resistance seems to be the only option.
Israel says it's closing the only crossing for Palestinian workers coming from the Gaza Strip. The Palestinians denounce the move as collective punishment. The regime says the closure is in response to alleged airstrikes conducted by resistance movement Hamas. Workers' union in Gaza criticized the measure, saying it hurts the area's already suffering economy. Hamas officials have also slammed it as a form of unacceptable aggression aimed at tightening the siege on Palestinians. The resistance's spokesperson told the media that such collective punishments against Palestinians have always proved to fail. Author and Middle East expert Kevin Barrett says that Israeli measures against Palestinians fit the very definition of genocide.
These 2 million people are packed into 140 square miles. It's the most densely populated zone on Earth. And the Zionists have essentially locked it down and maintained this siege for 15 years now, choking off food and medical supplies and basically, you know, measuring the calories so they can theoretically sort of barely keep everyone alive but without any surplus. So this is an ongoing human rights atrocity. It fits the definition of genocide. Well, the larger war on the Palestinian people fits that definition according to various scholars of international law. And this crackdown on the current exit of Gaza, preventing people from working, is probably going to just lead to a more tit-for-tat escalation. And it seems that the Zionists are seeking that because they've attacked the Masjid al-Aqsa during the holy month of Ramadan and engaged in other provocations over in the occupied West Bank. So it does seem that for whatever reasons, they're in that part of their cycle where they're trying to ramp up tensions and create problems.
A conference has been held in the Syrian capital Damascus for Palestinian youth. The event was organized amid continuous Israeli crimes committed against Palestinians in Al-Quds. That was the core subject of that event. Mohammed Ali in Damascus has the details.
The 16th session of the Quds Conference for Palestinian Youth was held in Damascus. Participants discussed means of uniting Palestinians in service of their cause, hailing resistance operations in occupied Palestine and the people's uprising in the face of Israeli forces.
Our message at this conference is that Palestinian youth outside Palestine are present on the front lines, just like the youth in Quds, Gaza and the West Bank. Palestinians are uniting. The sword of Palestine battle reflects this unity, and this conference is one of the results of that battle.
The conference is held in parallel with the International Al-Quds Day, which was set by late Imam Khomeini on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan every year.
The message of Iran on Quds Day is that the only path for regaining Palestinian rights is resistance against the crimes of the Zionist entity. The message of Quds International Day is Islamic unity in the face of Israeli crimes. The track of normalization will not affect regaining Palestinians' rights.
We as Palestinian, Syrian and Arab youth send a message to our people in Quds, in Aqsa Mosque, that we will support them until the liberation of Palestine, from the sea to the river. Thanks to the Resistance Alliance, today we are more capable of triumphing. And as Imam Khamenei said, Quds will remain the axis.
The final communique called for national unity among all Palestinian factions, as well as re-establishing the PLO with a national plan based on resistance against the Israeli enemy. Events like this reiterate that Palestinian refugees across the world will never give up their right of repatriation. It's a message to Israel that their struggle will never stop until ending the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Okay, now let's take a look at France, where polls are open, and incumbent President Macron fighting far-right rival Marine Le Pen. This is a final duel in the race for the top job. Some 49 million French are eligible to vote in the hotly contested runoff. Opinion polls predicting Macron to come out the winner. A victory will make him the first French president to be re-elected in two decades. But Macron says that's not final and has pleaded with voters to turn out in large numbers to avert a shock shift to the far right. And that amid Le Pen's insistence that opinion polls giving Macron the lead would be proved wrong. The two also faced off in the 2017 elections when Macron won by a decisive margin. Okay, that's the information we have had so far. Let's now go to Paris. Our correspondent Kristen Honda is there. Chris, how's it going? It must be around 10 in the morning there. So how's it been going so far?
Well, people are going to vote. It will be known only at 8 p.m. If there will be a political earthquake with the election of the far-right Marine Le Pen, or if France will know the continuation of the current anti-social politics of Macron. The difference between both, I mean, the gap is diminishing. 5 years ago, Marine Le Pen had only 33% after the second round. Today, the last polls are showing that the gap is only 9% in favor of Macron, which is diminishing. So this is due not so much due because of the electoral promises of Marine Le Pen, but it's more due to the anti-social politics of Macron. We should know that Macron is confronted with the rising energy and food prices the last weeks. He also said that he will put further away the retirement age at 65, and he is continuing the crackdown on public services. During the COVID crisis, many hospital beds have been eliminated, and he has continued that privatization of, in general, the public services. So there is, unfortunately, the issue of migration, which is unfortunately popular in France, also in other European Union countries. But people are discussing on the popular side if they should vote Macron or if they should stay at home. The reason is that people want, some people say it's the same, Le Pen and Macron are the same, but most people say that if they want to start the mobilization against the anti-social politics, it's better to be confronted with Macron than against Le Pen. So that's one of the main discussions amongst the people who are going to vote today. So a part of the Le Pen is really openly racist. She's speaking about a big replacement of the white population in France by non-white people. She's speaking about a re-migration, which means an accelerated sending back of migrants to their homelands. She speaks about banning the headscarves, not only in public places, in workplaces or offices, but also in the street. So this is a really openly anti-migrant, anti-Muslim campaign that she had led. And she, if she loses with the short gap with Macron, it will be due to the anti-social politics of Macron. People will vote for Macron, not with their heart, but more with their head.
Okay, exactly. Thanks for that. Kristen Honda, correspondent in Paris. Now moving on, Russian forces pounding cities and towns in southern and eastern Ukraine as the war between the two neighbors enters its third month. The biggest battle revolves around the southeastern port city of Mariupol, where Russia has resumed its assault. And the last Ukrainian forces hold up inside a giant steel plant. President Zelensky has warned that peace talks with Moscow will be suspended if his soldiers are killed. Meantime, in the eastern Lugansk region, Ukrainian officials say that Russian strikes on the village of Kursk have killed 6 civilians. 8 people, including a 3-month-old baby, lost their lives when Russia fired cruise missiles at the city of Odessa, according to officials there. Moscow has denied targeting civilians. It says the forces destroyed a logistics terminal in the Black Sea port that held a large batch of weapons delivered by the U.S. and the EU. Now, in other news, the satellite coalition is refusing to authorize commercial flights out of Yemen's capital, and that's despite a ceasefire agreement in place. National carrier Yemenia says that the first commercial flight from Sana'a in 6 years has been indefinitely postponed. The plane was due to take patients in need of medical treatment to Jordanian capital Amman. The arrangement was part of a 2-month UN-mediated truce between Yemen's Ansar Allah movement and the Saudi-led coalition in early April. The airport in Sana'a has been closed to commercial traffic since August 2016, when air raids by the Saudi coalition disrupted service to the city. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have lost their lives directly or indirectly due to the war and blockade that Saudi Arabia and its allies started more than 7 years ago. The country is crippled by poverty, hunger, and disease, with more than 70% of the population in dire need of humanitarian assistance. Now over to Sri Lanka. Now the government loyalists there are calling on the Prime Minister to quit as protest pressure keeps mounting over a worsening economic crisis. Media Minister Nalaka Godahewa and other senior party members demand the resignation of President Gotabaya Rajapaksa and his brother, Prime Minister Mahinda Rajapaksa. The media minister also is calling for the resignation of the entire cabinet for an all-inclusive interim government to take over. Godahewa says that the government lost its credibility after the police killing of a protester on Tuesday. The president has already fired 3 cabinet members, but protesters saying that those cosmetic changes aren't enough. The island nation is in the grip of its worst ever economic crisis, with people facing power cuts and shortages of food, fuel, and medicine. The situation has ignited protests with angry demonstrators camping outside the presidential office for over 3 weeks. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Listeners Special. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, April 24th, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So, as usual, please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English radio programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. Or if you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, listeners, especially it's your program, it's your views that are important. And here, as yesterday, April 23rd, corresponding with 21st of Ramadan, was the martyrdom anniversary of the Commander of the Faithful and the first infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Ali, peace upon him. Here we extend our condolences to you on this tragic day. And for your information, tonight might be the night of Qadr or ordainment. The night of Qadr, as you know, is the night of mercy, goodness and blessing till the rising of dawn. It is the best night of the year. According to narrations, the earth is filled with angels and the fate of all creatures is determined for the next year. Please pray for us, dear listeners around the world. So, may Allah accept our prayers and wishes on this great night. And as usual, we've received many emails and letters from around the world, which I mention some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails and letters. But for the time being, here we've received some reception reports from around the world, including reception reports from Kurt Ettlinger from Germany, Ding Lu from China, and Olof Ratovara from Finland. As you know, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. So all of you who have sent us a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. So here I do extend my appreciations to Olof Ratovara from Finland, Ding Lu from China, and Kurt Ettlinger from Germany for sending us reception reports. And as you know, Mohammad Khaku from the US has sent us an email. Mohammad Khaku is one of our old and regular listeners. Also from India, we've received an email from Madhab Chandra Sagur. From Japan, we've received from our old and regular listeners, from Toshiki Tesuboy. From the US again, we've received an email from Bill McDavid, and Alan Gale from the UK has sent us an email. Please stay with IRIB English Radio and listeners special. We come back with these great emails and letters. So, Madhab Chandra Sagur from India has sent us an email. He or she says, "Dear IRIB English Radio, a few days ago, I had the opportunity to listen to your broadcast in English. The intro music was so soothing and the reception in my place, Paragonas, India, was good. At the time of listening, the strong signal reached my area. I hope you find my reception report to be of some use. If the details are correct, please verify with a printed EQSL card. Thank you in advance. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Madhab Chandra Sagur from India. And many thanks for sending us this email. It seems that you've already joined IRIB English Radio. This is your radio. Let this mutual relationship between us and you continue. Madhab Chandra Sagur from India. Write us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon, and we are looking forward to hearing your views about IRIB English Radio programs. So my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, an electronic QSL card, as a confirmation. Yes, the details you sent were correct. We verify it by sending an electronic QSL card to you as a confirmation. So, Mohammad Khaku from the US, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a message, an email. Mohammad says, "We just made it through the first 15 days of Ramadan, the days of mercy. Alhamdulillah, it is truly a mercy that many of us are finally able to feel a sense of normalcy as COVID lays low this Ramadan. Salam and warm greetings to you, Muhammad Khaku from the U.S. Please accept our appreciations to you for sending us this email. As you said, things are going, actually things, I mean, regarding the coronavirus and this disease are going to normal in this month, the month of Ramadan, which is the month of mercy. So we hope that this Ramadan, everything bad in the world, including the COVID-19, comes to an end. So Muhammad Khaku from the U.S., thank you very much for sending us this message, and thank you very much for your prayers and wishes. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best. Thank you very much. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. So after a short break, I will be back with an email from Japan from Toshiki Tsubo. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. Toshiki Tsubo from Japan has sent us an email. Toshiki says, "Dear IRIB staff, my name is Toshiki Tsubo and I am a student who loves broadcast listening and DXing. Yesterday, I listened to your English broadcast and I'd like to send you a reception report. I also send an MP3 file that I record your broadcast. I feel very grateful if you accept this and send me a QSL card or an EQSL card." Salam and warm greetings to you, Toshiki Tsubo from Japan, and thank you very much for sending us this email. So you like broadcast listening and DXing, and that's great. Toshiki Tsubo from Japan, why don't you tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs in an upcoming email? Yes, we are waiting for that. Yes, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card or EQSL card as a confirmation. And thank you for attaching MP3 file of our broadcast. So we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Toshiki Tsubo from Japan. And again, from the U.S., we've received an email from one of our old and regular listeners, from Bill McDevitt. Bill says, "Dear staff, greetings from Florida. I'm listening on the new frequencies as an updated on your website. The season is changing from winter to summer here. As a result, reception of your station and many others is difficult at this time. As the season progresses into summer, your signals will gradually improve. Noise levels, static at this time of the year, are strong throughout the daytime hours in North America. I will keep you posted as to your signal levels as we get into summer. My wife and I are cyclists, bicycles, not motorcycles. We travel all around North America during summer months, riding various trails. We have road trails in 20 states so far. I look forward to hearing your English program again on IRIB World Service. Best regards." Salam and warmest greetings to you, Bill McDevitt from the U.S., and please accept our gratitudes for sending us this great email. So we're so happy that you're listening on the new frequencies as updated on the website, and as you said, the reception of your stations and many others is good. As you said, the signals is improving because we are going from winter to the warm season, and that's great. So you're receiving strong signals during the daytime hours in your region in North America, and that's good. We are so happy for that. So thank you for sharing your information about your hobbies. As you said, you like cycling, you and your wife are cyclists, you like riding on bicycles, and you travel all around North America during summer months, riding various trails, and that's great. Wish you the best. We also are looking forward to hearing from you, Bill McDevitt from the U.S. We are waiting for, of course, your views about IRIB English radio programs. Write to us soon. And after a short break, I will be back with an email from Alan Gale. So stay with us, please. Yes, Alan Gale from the UK has sent us an email. Alan says to all the staff at IRIB English Radio, may you have a blessed and enjoyable Ramadan, and thank you for all your services and the work you put into them throughout the year. In the UK, a number of special short-term radio licenses are issued throughout the month of Ramadan, and these go under the name of Radio Ramadan. There is one in the nearby town of Oldham. One of these operate on special short-term FM frequencies and are in both the English and Urdu languages. Very best regards to all, and thank you for your recent email and EQSL. They were very much appreciated. Salam and warm greetings to you, Alan Gale from the UK. And please accept our appreciations to you for sending us this email and for the, all the details you just mentioned. Thank you very much for this great email. And you also may have a blessed and enjoyable Ramadan. And thank you for telling us your views about, IRIB English radio programs. And that's great. A region, you said, nearby town of Oldham, of course, is broadcasting Radio Ramadan. And that's good. That's great. And as you said, it's short-term FM frequencies that are both in English and Urdu languages. That's good. So, Alan Gale from the UK, wish you all the best. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So here we reach to the end of our program, this week's actually listeners special. But before saying goodbye, again, I sent my appreciations to our great listeners, including Toshiki Tsuboi from Japan, Muhammad Khaku from the U.S., Madhab Chandra Sugur from India, Bill McDevitt from the U.S., Alan Gale from the UK for sending us emails. And also, I do extend my gratitude to those of our listeners who have sent us reception reports, including all of Ratovara from Finland, Ding Lu from China, and Kurt Ettlinger from Germany. As you know, tonight might be the night of Qadr or the night of ordainment. The night of Qadr is the night of mercy, goodness, and blessing till the rising of dawn. It is the best night of the year. According to narrations, the earth is filled with angels, and the fate of all creatures is determined for the next year. Please pray for us, and may God accept all our prayers and all our wishes. Many thanks for being with us. Wish you all the best. Goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to English Radio at irib.ir. That is one word, English Radio at irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all.
Tensions continue to simmer in the occupied Al-Quds. Israeli forces have once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Dozens of Palestinians have been injured. Why is the international community not giving this the attention that it deserves? Is it too preoccupied or distracted with Ukraine? In this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at how Israeli desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and its violations against Palestinians has become a world rallying point behind Palestinians. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Founder of ThePolemist.net, Jim Kavanaugh, joins us from New York. We also have writer and activist Laith Marouf, who joins us from Montreal. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Let me first start with you, Jim Kavanaugh. We're looking at, in as many days, how the Al-Aqsa Mosque is being desecrated, and you have violence that's being exerted against the Palestinians. The Israeli police have used heavy-handed tactics against the Palestinian worshippers who want to pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, but they're being prevented from praying. Why has Israel decided to exercise such violations, which is, if you can say, more severe than previous times?
Yeah, I do think that Israel is taking advantage of the distraction of the world regarding Ukraine to be extremely militant in all kinds of ways. It's certainly at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, but also in the West Bank. Israeli settlers are destroying farmers' olive trees. Israel has just attacked Gaza again. I think Israel knows that the world's attention is even less than it normally is, going to be held on to the, by it, going to be looking at Israel and being ready to criticize anything that Israel does. Everybody, certainly in the American sphere of influence, is all gung-ho now about Ukraine, and they're not going to let anything dilute that message. And Israel is going to have more impunity, it feels, I think, going after the Palestinians at this time. And I expect to see more of this. You know, I think they are taking advantage of the situation in the world and using it as a distraction behind which to really crack down in a nasty way against the Palestinians.
Well, Laith Marouf, we need to make sure that this is highlighted, and that is the way that the news is being reported. ICE explained what has happened by saying Israeli police have used heavy-handed tactics against the Palestinian worshippers wanted to pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Now, the media is reporting it as Israeli police clashed with Palestinian protesters on Friday in the latest violence at Jerusalem's Flashpoint Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. So it makes it look like, you know, it's the worshippers who also are exercising violence against the Israeli security forces. How do you see the media narrative that Israel is trying to paint? Is it successful?
I just want to caution, because last year, before the war started in Gaza, there was almost 2 weeks of constant humiliation and attacks and desecration of the Aqsa Mosque. And during those almost 2 weeks prior to the beginning of military activities from Gaza, the media in the West also ignored what was happening in Palestine last year. And therefore, I don't think at this moment we can say that there's that the Zionists are benefiting from the situation in Ukraine in terms of trying to hide their activities in Palestine. In fact, the media last year during the war, also the Western media, attempted to hide this reality from the viewers in the West, and it was the success of the Palestinian people and the diaspora of the Palestinian people and those who were in solidarity with them who flooded the social media with information about what was happening and broke the wall of silence in the West. Today, we're in the same situation. And, you know, there will be continued blackout of information from Palestine in the media in the West until the Palestinians and those who are in solidarity with them are able to break that blackout.
Well, taking a look at Jim Kavanaugh, the numbers coming through on how many have been injured, this is what the Palestinian Red Crescent has reported, that 57 people were wounded, including 14 Palestinians taken to the hospital, at least one of them in a serious condition. And this comes after the storming of the compound. They were all Palestinians. Why is it that not one Israeli was reported to have been injured? Why is there such an imbalance?
Well, for the same reason there's always an imbalance. Israel is armed. These are armed militants, whether they're armed police or armed army or armed settlers. And the Palestinians are an unarmed subject population. So they're the ones who are going to suffer from this. This is what's been going on for decades. And it's not going to stop. Now, I do hope that there is the other side of the coin about the Ukraine situation is that all the arguments being made, there's no argument that's being made about Ukraine that can't be made about Israel, and you know, which has been going on for a lot longer and caused a lot more human suffering. So that is a way in which the discourse may be turned to Palestinians' benefit. But the imbalance of power, both militarily, is in on the ground in terms of police and army and armed settlers, and ideologically in the world in terms of the ideological apparatus of the world, which favors Israel. So, you know, we still are in that position, and it does require a tide of, it's a good way of putting it, a tide of discourse in social media to insist that the world pay attention to what's going on and what's happening to the Palestinians, which is, of course, a crime of 70 years.
Leif Maruf, what do you think about the heavy-handed tactics that have been used? I mean, we're looking at, first of all, Israel has called what it's doing, the tactic, it calls it a law and order approach in order to deal with the Palestinians. I'm looking at rubber-tipped bullets, and for the first time, the use of these drones to spray tear gas. And in one particular incident, this happened last week, however, a 17-year-old to have been shot in the abdomen with an exploding bullet that ruptured his blood vessels and veins. So I don't quite understand this law and order tactic that Israel says. Where's the law and where's the order?
Yeah, it doesn't matter what the Israelis say. What matters is that they are continuing to act insane. And, you know, to be very clear, everything that the Zionists are doing right now is actually harming their own objectives. If they were smart enough, as their master in D.C. is withdrawing from West Asia and attempting to concentrate on Russia and China, they would have calmed the situation for their master in West Asia and let things go smoothly until that situation with Russia is resolved somehow to the favor of their master. But they are like so insane in their supremacy that they can't hold themselves back and are, acting in such ways in Jerusalem that could lead us into a new war just like last year. And this time things could spill out into a regional confrontation. And believe me, the United States is not ready for it. And definitely the Zionists are not ready for it.
Do you agree with that, Jim Kavanaugh, that this is going to potentially result in a wider, perhaps, war?
Yes, I think that's a real possibility. Look, they've attacked Gaza. I think that they do, as your other guest says, have a sense of superiority and omnipotence that's going to bite them in the butt if they keep up with it, you know, because at some point there's going to be a serious pushback and a serious fight back and a serious military fight back that threatens to lead to a wider war. You know, we're in a very dangerous situation in the world in general, and the Israelis are not, as the other guest says, they're not a faction that's, you know, going to be very shrewd about holding back. For if they see an opportunity, what they think is an opportunity, to push forward and to gain some more territory and to repress the Palestinians some more, they will do it. And at some point, that could lead very, very quickly to a regional war.
Well, Laith Maruf, we're looking at how Israel reinforced its so-called Iron Dome system on the Gaza border just recently. And some are looking at the way that Israel has reacted so far as pointing to the fact that perhaps the Prime Minister Naftali Bennett is really not too keen to go into a war with the Gaza Strip, because A, it doesn't want to see what happened last time around when there was a war, because obviously the Iron Dome in one respect and one aspect of that war did not function the way that it should have. And B, it doesn't want to see the occupied West Bank erupt in protests. How do you assess it?
Well, it's clear from the last few days of attacks on Gaza that the resistance has new capabilities, and they've hinted to them with what we saw of the use of anti-air missiles that chased away the F-16s and the Apache helicopters of the Zionists. And therefore, it's clear in any next confrontation, we will see new weapons come into play. The other very important signal that came out in the last few days was from the Islamic Republic of Iran, where it showed its latest and most advanced drone named Gaza. And this drone can carry half a ton of explosives and can fly for over 36 hours before refueling. And therefore, this is Iran giving a signal to the Zionists not to push the envelope. We know from the last confrontation that there was at least 8 drones flying over the occupied territories, Palestine, by Hezbollah and Axis of Resistance. So the hints that were given out in the last few days by the Axis of Resistance from Palestine all the way to the Islamic Republic is clearly signaling that we are ready for defending Jerusalem.
Same question to you, Jim Kavanaugh. Of course, the way that the resistance has accelerated and improved the tools that it has to use in its resistance operations is now more advanced. The last war proved just that. And we can see how Israel is scrambling to improve the Iron Dome capabilities. At the same time, many are saying that Israel is not keen on having this war, and according to the way, for example, how Hamas has reacted, it has said that international mediators have continued contacting them, but they could only hold back so much, because if the violations continue, this is going to set off another military confrontation. Do you foresee that happening?
Well, you know, I can't predict exactly what's going to happen, but I say there's a real danger of it. And yes, the Israelis know, and the Americans know, that the Axis of Resistance has weapons, has new weapons. That's what the Iran nuclear negotiations are really about. They're about trying to stop Iran from supporting the Axis of Resistance, and the Axis of Resistance getting weapons and getting technologies that will threaten Israeli cities. So, you know, there are factions in the United States and Israel who want war, and there are factions who are afraid of war. And this is one of the things that, you know, we can't control. They're going to have their debates and discussions, and it's hard to know who's in the ascendancy in that. But there definitely is a situation that everyone in the world should be aware of, that these things are not any longer going to go down just one way. The damage isn't just going to be done to Israel, to Palestine and Gaza. You know, there's a real threat of damage to Israel, and there's a real threat of Hamas saying, you've crossed a red line of Al-Aqsa or whatever it is, and Iran saying, you've crossed a red line, and this becoming a wider war. So, you know, this is something that everybody in the world should be aware of. And unfortunately, Western media isn't making people aware of it.
Well, there's another major development that's happening, Laith Maruf. Of course, this started years and years ago, but we're seeing it accelerated in the past weeks, especially the past days, because of people seeing the side of Israeli police officers deploying and firing, for example, these stun grenades to inside the mosque or at Palestinians, and the heavy-handed tactics that they used. And that is what's happened on social media, which is translated now to protests that are happening worldwide. We're seeing lots of organizations that have come out in support of Palestinians. Looking at, for example, in Berlin, in Germany, or even New York, there was one days ago, and other parts of the world. Do you think that this is going to snowball into the media attention that this deserves, and then, of course, the plight of Palestinians?
Yes, of course. I mean, this is now a predictable pattern. In fact, I just want to be very, very clear to our listeners, viewers in the East and the South, that the vast majority of labor unions and student unions and civil society organizations in much of Canada, much of the United States and Western Europe have already signed on to the boycott, divestment, and sanctions years ago. Some of the organizations, for instance, here in Quebec, the largest unions signed on to the BDS over a decade ago. So what is what are the maximum that these demonstrations and civil society movements can do in a country like Canada or the West is already been shown. The governments in the West do not care for the opinion of their civilians. They don't even care about the opinions of Canadians who don't want, for instance, the genocide of Indigenous people in Canada, but the Canadian government continues. So why would they stop supporting genocide in Palestine because the Canadian public, for instance, doesn't like that? So the truth of the matter is that, yes, we will need to continue this work of informing people in the West, but just as understanding that is part of a propaganda war and an effort to lift the spirits of our people on the ground in Palestine. Beyond that, there is no hope of changing the position of Western governments except through the military defeat of their Zionist colony, their beachhead war island that is there to destabilize West Asia and North Africa.
A number of reports have come out in the past, not this year, but overall in about a year's time, that we're looking at Jim Kavanaugh, that have labeled Israel as an apartheid regime. One of the most recent ones has come out by Michael Link, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip, which he has said Israel's decade-long occupation, quote, has become indistinguishable from practices of apartheid and based on institutional discrimination of one racial, national, ethnic group over another. Nothing new there, but it keeps being highlighted now at a more accelerated pace. Do you think that has led to the world really realizing what is going on and therefore leading to mass mobilizations, as we have seen recently?
Well, it's a sign, you know, over the past 18 months, certainly 2 years, the notion of calling Israel an apartheid state has become much more prevalent. You know, I wrote about it. You know, my good friend Richard Falk has been doing it for decades. And now it's become the Human Rights Watch itself, Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem. Essentially, this is a regime of ethnic supremacy from the river to the sea, you know. And this is now widely accepted in the Western discourse, in a way that it wasn't, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But still, we have to recognize that hasn't resulted in a political breakthrough. You know, as your previous guest says, the political and the major media, establishment media outlets are kind of immune to the pressure to a great extent. And really, they're not going to get worried about it until Israel starts to be threatened in a way that they can see militarily. I think that's correct. In a way that they see that, you know, this is a real danger. And then they'll start to take it more seriously. So Israel has already lost the ideological war. Zionism has lost the ideological war among people around the world. Even it's losing it among young Jewish people in the United States. And that's a fact. But that the political implications of that and the breakthrough implications in terms of what would happen to change radically the situation in Palestine has not broken through to the controlling elements of politics and media in the Western world.
Is there even a political incentive for Israel, Leith Maruf, to? I mean, I know that this particular administration, headed by Naftali Bennett, has said we're not interested in any type of discussions, and they've gone ahead with their. Not that previous administrations were. I mean, they say they were, but the settlement buildings continued, the violations continued. But this particular one has said no talks. Why do you think that is?
There's a very famous video.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
There's a very famous video of current President Biden from the 90s speaking to an audience, telling them that the United States, if there was no Israel, would have invented Israel. And this is what people need to understand, that the Israelis know this. That the actual empire, the existence currently, to be able to rule the world from D.C., to be able to project its military hegemony and its cultural hegemony over much of Asia and Africa, it has no choice but to maintain the Zionist colony. The minute the Zionist colony ceases to exist, then all the order that it controls, the United States and controls in Western Asia and North Africa, will collapse, and therefore the United States will not be able to project its power to the rest of Asia and Africa. And this is what, you know, continuing to speak about the Zionist lobby as something that is forcing the United States to do something that it doesn't want to is actually harmful. The Zionists themselves know that the existence of the United States as an empire depends on them, and the empire knows that too. And therefore, their existence is in a symbiosis. And now that when you understand that, then it's easier to identify our enemy and the steps to take to defeat that enemy.
I wish I had time for one more question for you, Jim Cavanaugh. We're fresh out of time. I do apologize for that. Let me thank your guest, writer and activist Leith Maruf, who spoke to us from Montreal. Thank you, Leith Maruf. And thank you, Jim Cavanaugh, founder of the Polemist.net from New York. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. For Mika Vitale and the team, it's goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.